Welcome to Stand to Reason. Dear friends, Greg Kokel here, and I'm kind of a little giddy because I get to spend most of the next hour with one of my best chums. Stuck there in the cold, frozen tundra wastelands of Ontario, Canada, Tim Barnett, Mr. Red Pen Logic. What a treat to have you on board, Tim.
That's Mr. B to you, Greg.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh, my goodness. Well, it's always fun to share a show with you. We got to do this more often. I said this at staff meeting, and it's just a lot of fun, and I think it's fun for our listeners as well. And one of the reasons that we're kind of teamed up together here is to talk about some RPL projects, Red Pen Logic. But and people are queuing up here on the lines. We'll be getting to you later in the hour, or certainly by the second hour, because Tim's just on for an hour. We want to talk a little bit about some things. First things first, though, Tim, what's the temp where you're at right now? And don't give me incentigrade stuff, because we don't speak that language.
Okay, well,
don't know how to do it.
Well, let me put it this way. It is right around the freezing mark.
Okay? Oh, okay. Now, that's good.
Yeah, it is. It's getting better. I just looked at the forecast, and we're going to hit double digits as far as Celsius. So yeah. That's not bad for this time of year.
Oh, so I even use the wrong terminology. You wouldn't say centigrade, right? Because that's like linear measurement. It's not temp. So Celsius.
Yes, Celsius is the right terminology.
Okay, it's all goofy. It's all based on hundreds, and you can't do carpentry like that. It just doesn't work well. Anyway, I got up when I headed for the office this morning. 45 degrees here, which 32 is freezing. I don't know what it translates, but that was pretty chilly for Southern Cal. Mm-hmm. We had frost on the ground night before last. So it's kind of nice to have those chilly mornings, and then it kind of toasts up, and we have the beautiful sunshine and the clear skies and all and we don't have ice on the road. We don't have to deal with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so the ice left last week, and I'm hoping we don't get any more snow. So we're done with that. And the sun is now out. So it's a little deceiving, though. You see the sun out, you want to go out in your shorts and a t-shirt, but that ain't happening. Okay, you're still bundling up with your winter coat, your toque, or your beanie, whatever you guys call it. And look, we have a puppy. We have a puppy, which means we spend a lot of time out in the backyard, just asking her, praying that she will go pee.
Please go.
Please, quickly. Quickly,
get back
inside. Yeah.
Well, it's been a year since you've come south of the border, Tim, and that's been painful for us because we love hanging out with you, and you missed a couple of realities. Hopefully, this year things will open up, and you'll be down for Southern California reality in September, and then to Seattle in October, and then to Minneapolis in November. So anyway, looking forward to seeing you. But you have, of course, you're the master of RPL. You're Mr. B. And for those who don't know, Red Pen Logic is this fabulous new thing that's the brainchild of Tim Barnett, and he's the host of it. And he finds these little memes, the popular pieces that are put out usually by atheists or skeptics or sometimes progressive Christians that are kind of in the face of classical Christians, and they make a point, and without exception, the ones we deal with are ones that make the point really poorly, which means they're vulnerable to critique. And not that atheists can't say or progressive Christians can't offer a good argument, but most of the things that we've seen have not been in that category, and so they've been easy to critique as a training tool for the rest of you. If you have stumbled upon this particular meme and wondered, scratching your head, how to deal with it, well, Tim will help you with that. Mm-hmm. But he also does it in a really fun way. So not only do you get an answer to the meme proper, but you also get the process by which Tim works through the problem. And that's part of what Stand to Reason does. We're translators. We help you to think more carefully about your convictions, and we want you to see the process, okay? It's like making sausage. You want to see how it goes, right? Mm. But in our case, it's a prettier picture than the sausage example. So,
oh, yeah.
So we're going to do that a little bit today because we have one meme coming up here that Tim stumbled across, and Amy and Tim and I have been talking around it, and we thought, well, it might be good to let you guys in on it. Yeah. Tell us about the meme, Tim.
Well, before I do that, Greg, I just want to say and let everybody know, because you said, you know, Tim does this, Tim does that, Tim does... And I am the face of RPL. I mean, people see my mug when they hop on the YouTube channel.
Mug is a good way of describing it.
Yeah.
A singular countenance, Tim.
But what people need to understand, and I think they'll get a glimpse of that as we kind of walk through this one, is there's a whole team behind this, okay? And so there's Greg Cash. He's the video guy. You know, he works kind of a magic. Miracle.
Magic.
He works the magic. And then you have, you know, Clarissa, and she's doing the thumbnail, very creative. Of course, Greg, you and I, and Amy, I mean, she gets looped into this. And I mean, there's a number of people. And we go back and forth on these things. It's not like we just sit down, write a script, or I just hit record and then we go from there. No, there's a lot of time that's spent so that we can do our best to answer the challenge in the shortest amount of time possible, having a lot of fun in the process, making it kind of a learning experience for those who watch. Yeah. And we want them to see how we thought through this process, right? And so hopefully as we go through this one, people kind of get a glimpse of that.
Let me add to that, Tim. Thank you so much for that, and that's great. What I want to add is that if you've been around Stand to Reason for a while, I suspect, Tim, when people see these memes, having been tutored in general in careful thinking, they're going to see the problem rather quickly, which we do really quickly. We see, oh, this, boom, 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 boom. So we see the problem. The reason it takes time is to craft the response so that it's concise, it's within our time limit, it doesn't sound snarky, it hits all the points, and in a way that's intelligible and coherent and easy to consume. That's where the time is.
That's right.
It isn't in spotting the error. And the reason I say that is because we want to encourage the people who are looking at Red Pen Logic and all the stuff with Stand to Reason that they are capable of seeing these mistakes with a little bit of education. Now, they may not be capable of crafting a response like we do with Red Pen Logic, but that's a different skill. Assessing these things is definitely within most people's capability, especially if they've been tutored by the Red Pen Logic in how to do that. When we point these things out, then people go, oh, I could see that now that it's explained. Some things are caught rather than taught, and RPL is a way of catching things as Tim, being the narrator, is going through the details. So good foundation here. What do you got?
So recently, I think it was last week, I stumbled across, it was actually on Twitter, but it was a video that was made on TikTok. It was a 1-minute video by a Reverend Brandon Robertson. And what caught my attention, this Reverend, Mr. Reverend, we'll call him, he makes a video that describes how Jesus, now hold on to your seats here, folks, repents of his racism. He repents of his racism. So did you know, according to Mr. Reverend, that Jesus was a racist? But don't worry, he was shown the error of his ways by the Syrophoenician woman in Mark chapter 7.
Oh.
Okay.
This ought to be subtitled, Jesus Gets Woke.
Yeah.
How about that?
There you go. I'm going to write that down in case you want to use that as a thumbnail. And see, this is exactly how the sausage gets made. Because you may, if you watch this video, you know, next week or whenever we put it out, you may see Jesus Gets Woke on there. And if you listen to STR, you know, podcast, you're going to say, hey, I saw the creation of that. Okay.
So that's the synergism with Tim and me and Amy, and we just knock this thing around, and it causes us to think of other things and other ways to put it, and anyway, it gets tightened down. But you're right, that was kind of a spur-of-the-moment brainstorm of mine, but it may enter into the thumbnail. So how does, now what I'm going to do How about, Tim, why don't you go ahead and read the the text of the entire piece. We'll come back to pieces of it, but well, let's let people get the whole thing, and then I want to go back to the text itself and read the text that is being referred to and characterized in a very particular kind of way, Jesus the racist repenting after he's confronted by the Syrophoenician woman.
Sure. So this is what the reverend says. Did you know that there's part of the Gospel of Mark where Jesus uses a racial slur? In Mark chapter 7, there's an account of a Syrophoenician woman, a woman who is Syrian and Greek, both of which were strong biases against within the Jewish community. And she comes to ask Jesus to heal her daughter, who is possessed by a demon. And what is Jesus' response? He says, "It's not good for me to give the children's food," meaning the children of Israel's food, "to dogs." He calls her a dog. What's amazing about this account is that the woman doesn't back down. She speaks truth to power. She confronts Jesus and says, "Well, you can think that about me, but even dogs deserve the crumbs from the table." Her boldness and bravery to speak truth to power actually changes Jesus' mind. Jesus repents of his racism and extends healing to this woman's daughter. I love this story because it's a reminder that Jesus is human. He had prejudices and biases, and when confronted with it, he was willing to do his work. And this woman was willing to stand up and speak truth. End quote. Okay, that wasn't me. That was him.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Now, let me just say a couple of things about that before I read the text. This has been gotten around, and there have been different people have responded to this. James White did a response, and some others have responded in different ways. We're just kind of going for the text itself and just trying to unwrap this, because actually, I think for many Christians, this is a confusing passage, Tim.
Yeah.
And because the reverend says, did you know there's a part in the gospel where Jesus uses a racial slur? Well, he does do that. And I think there have been some responses that tried to sanitize it and say, well, this is like an endearment, like puppy love or something. I don't know. No.
Yeah.
It is a racial slur. There's no question about that. Okay. The conclusion that our reverend comes to is that Jesus was a racist who then repented from his racism, and he was vulnerable to this because he was only human. He has his flaws, and he was being corrected by the Syrophoenician woman who was willing to stand up to him and speak truth to power.
Yeah.
Now, before I read the text, I just want to ask the question, for those of you who are familiar with Jesus of Nazareth because you are familiar with the Gospels, does anything sound odd about this characterization? You know, Tim, if I were to tell you I found in the Bible where Jesus was a rapist, what would your response be automatically out of the gate?
It would be, I have a few questions. It would be, that's not the Jesus that I've read over and over and over again. This is completely out of character.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a standard response. That's completely out of character. But it's not the only thing that's out of character in this characterization.
Mm-hmm.
Because here we've got Jesus who is not just a racist, which is bad enough, but is broadly a fallen sinner. He's merely human.
Yeah.
Is that the characterization that we get of Jesus in the Gospels, that he's merely human?
Not even close.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. The Word was God. All things came into being through him. I mean, that's the introduction to his life, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. I mean, that's not so. We didn't actually talk about this, Tim, but it just occurred to me while I was driving along. I mean, Jesus has lots of confrontations with people who are trying to upend him and trap him and correct him. By the way, what is the success ratio?
Zero.
Zero.
I was just reading, Mark. They eventually give up, right? There's a number of confrontations there, right? In Mark 10, 11, 12, and eventually they just give up. They won't ask him any more questions.
No, they couldn't beat him. And then Jesus takes a little holiday up the coast to Tyre and Sidon, a Gentile region, and has this encounter with this woman, and man, she bests him just like that, you know, according to the reverend.
Yeah.
And what she does is, as he puts it, speaks
truth to power.
To power. Now, that was another thing that I wondered. Jesus is the power. Really? He represents the landed aristocracy of Israel, the establishment. No, Jesus was fighting that establishment all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, that's what got him killed, that he was the one speaking truth to power, you know. So I would think, out of the gate, before even anybody reads the account itself, Tim, that they would realize, they would think, wait a minute, I've read Jesus, I've read the Gospels. This characterization is nothing like the Jesus that I read there. I mean, just kind of what you said a few moments ago. And that would be a fair challenge to raise, okay? So what I'm going to do here, let me read the text itself, and then I'm going to let you start weighing in on some of the contextual problems of reading this this passage in the way that the Reverend Brandon Robertson read the text. Verse 24, Mark 7 starts, Jesus got up and went away from there to the region of Tyre. And when he had entered a house, and by the way, we're going to talk in a moment of what he got up from and went away from, because that's the immediate context, okay? And that'll be something you could get into in a moment. But in any event, so he's going, and when he enters a house, he wants no one to know of it. He could not escape notice. But after hearing of him, a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately came and fell at his feet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the woman was a Gentile. Of course, this is Tyre, right? Of the Syrophoenician race. And she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And he was saying to her, let the children, that would be the Jews, and I think the Reverend Brandon got this correct here. Let the children be satisfied first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Now, by the way, let me just pause for a moment, Tim, and just ask you a question, your understanding of the circumstances in general. So Jesus is saying that his first food, he said, let the children be satisfied first, right? Mm-hmm. The food is first to go to the Jews. How is that project going at this particular point in Jesus' ministry?
Yeah, it's not going well. And so, I mean, if you were to back up just in this same chapter, you'd see how it's going, right? You see that the Pharisees, the Jews, they are the ones who are rejecting the message,
uh-huh.
right? He even says that this people honors me with their lips. He's quoting the Old Testament here, but their heart is far from me.
Mm-hmm.
And so things are not going well with the children of Israel.
With that plan. There's a lot of crumbs on the floor because they've been pushing them off the table onto the floor. And I have, you know, and I just have this suspicion that she's aware of this because her response is very clever. And that's our next passage, our next verse.
Yeah.
And she answered and said to him, note the words, we'll come back to this. Yes, Lord,
mm-hmm.
but even the dogs under the table feed on the children's crumbs.
Yeah.
And he said to her, because of this answer, go, the demon has gone out of your daughter. And going back to her home, she found the child lying on the bed and the demon having left her. And I'm just thinking about, now, there's the text. And by the way, folks, when you have a characterization like is offered here by this, I presume a progressive Christian, he's a reverend, I imagine he's a reverend in the Christian tradition of some sort, but then he's offering this finite Jesus who gets corrected and And then he repents and all this strikes me as maybe a progressive Christian. Yeah. When you have these type cite passages, you have to go back to the passages and see if the characterization there is accurate or not. Okay. So there it is. There it sits. So what was your first line of thinking here about the problems with this way of characterizing the passages, Tim?
Yeah. So the first thing I did, just as you described, I mean, when I heard this, I thought, because he just quotes the one verse, you know, the idea that it's not right to give the children's bread to the dogs. That's all he actually quotes from scripture. And he doesn't even do that actually properly. And he actually misquotes her response as well. The yes, Lord, we'll come back to that. That's really important.
Yeah.
But I went and I applied the never read a Bible verse. I started looking at this. Now, even before I started reading the context, or even around the chapter 7 context, I went further and started looking at the context of the Gospel of Mark. And what you find is that you get a picture of Jesus. And it is a picture of this good Jesus, this Jesus who it has a certain kind of morality. You know, he's the guy who says that, and we could go through all these things like love your neighbor, you know, pray for those who persecute you, turn the other cheek, you know, first shall be last shall be first, this kind of thing. So already I have kind of a high standard for Jesus just from knowing the character of Jesus and reading the rest of the gospel. So it does seem, and we talked about being out of character, for us to get to chapter 7, and then all of a sudden Jesus drops this racial slur. He just straight up calls this woman a dog. Okay, there's something. And so all of a sudden I'm thinking there's more going on here. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it. There's more going on here. And by the way, this is a racial slur, and it's a slur that the Jews characteristically used of Gentiles.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, this isn't the only place that Jesus made reference to something like this. On the Sermon on the Mount, right? The greatest moral teachings, you know, some people say that that we've ever read.
Yeah.
Chapter 7, don't throw your pearls to swine,
mm-hmm.
and do not throw what is holy to dogs. So there's another reference. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think Jesus is calling people swines or dogs, but I think he's using a metaphoric statement to help us understand a dynamic there. But certainly the Jews talk like this. And in fact, in Psalm 22, which is a psalm that depicts the crucifixion, 700 years or so before, maybe even more than that, before crucifixions were happening, maybe 1,000 years, if that's David, then, you know, it says the dogs of Bashan have surrounded me, you know, so I think it's the dog. The dogs certainly have surrounded. So there is the another reference that to the Jews' idea about Gentiles using that language. So there's no question that this is a freighted phrase.
Yeah.
The question is, why does Jesus use it?
Yeah.
So go ahead. I kind of cut you off.
No, that's on. I'm just trying to paint a picture. I'm trying to get a picture in my mind of Jesus up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see is he's good. And not only is he good,
He's magnificently good.
That's
he's
right.
Unbelievably good.
Unbelievably good.
His standard of goodness is one that makes us gag and choke because we can't even get close to that, you know?
And most people agree on that, right? This isn't just Christians saying that. Most people, that's why people want Jesus on their side, right? Now, you have this magnificent Jesus. And then you also have, I mean, more specifically, you have a Jesus who loves Gentiles. Mm. But this goes right to the point,
mm-hmm.
because when you start to read through the Gospel of Mark, you see that, and the other Gospels, you see that when Jesus has interactions with Gentiles, he approaches them with love. He is, we might say, pro-Gentile, okay? And so if you even went back to chapter 5, he heals a demon-possessed man. And most people know the story. You know, this demon-possessed man, he has a legion in him, all these unclean spirits. And where does he cast them? He casts them into a herd of swine, pigs. this is not Jewish country, you know, this is Gentile region. This is a Gentile mm-hmm. country. And so here's an example of Jesus hanging out, you know, in a Gentile region, healing a Gentile, doing this, the same thing that he's been asked to do here, cast out a demon. So it's not that Jesus is against Gentiles, which that's the impression you get when you just watch the Reverend's 1 minute TikTok video.
Yeah, but what you miss here, Tim, you don't realize, is that Jesus was not a racist in Mark 5. He was really nice, but something, he just got corrupted somehow in two chapters, and now he's using the racial slur, and he needs to be straightened out again. Get back on the tracks there, Jesus. Notice, by the way, this point, this is really important point you're making, Tim, that Jesus not only exemplified tremendous love for Gentiles and concern for them, but the highest praise in the Gospels mm-hmm. is reserved for Gentile individuals who show more faith and trust in him than the Jews did characteristically. And think of the centurion who sent his servant to ask Jesus to heal his daughter, and Jesus was going to come and go to his place, and he said, no, tell Jesus that I'm a man with authority. I know how authority works. You don't have to come here. Just say the word. It'll be done. And so Jesus commended him as the greatest faith in it. So there are lots of occasions like that.
Yeah. And so we can't just, here's the thing. And this is what I think the Reverend needs us to do, is read this verse out of context, just stand alone. And I'm sympathetic. If someone, if I was just flipping through social media and watched his video and saw there, hey, yeah, Jesus, he calls this woman a dog. Man, yeah, Jesus is racist. That's the impression you get when you just read that verse alone. Mm-hmm. But we don't just have that verse. We've got all of Mark 7. We have all the Gospel of Mark. We have other Gospels, and they all uniformly say the same thing. And that message is that Jesus loves Gentiles, and he reserved, like you said, the highest praise. There is the greatest faith in all of Israel, mm-hmm. Gentile.
Yeah. Hey, Tim, let me point out another verse that I think supports your point, but is frequently misunderstood because of the way movies deal with this passage. It's this wonderful scene in characterized in Luke 4, mm-hmm. where Jesus is at the in Nazareth, where he grew up, at the synagogue there, and he reads from the scroll of Isaiah. He doesn't finish the scroll. He stops in the middle of it, closes it, and he sits down. And then he says to the crowd that is sitting there, today, this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. And I think that is, man, that's one of the places I wish I could visit. I could be there. I could go back in time and be sitting there when he says it. Because what an incredible statement. Now, if you watch the movies, what you're going to see is when he says this, pandemonium breaks out. Everybody starts screaming. They get mad at him because he's making a reference to himself as the Messiah. But that isn't what happens. Next verse. And all were speaking well of him and wondering at the gracious words which were falling from his lips. And they were saying, is this not Joseph's son? I mean, he grew up there, but they're mystified a little bit. And then Jesus starts talking about God's favor on two different Gentile people in the Old Testament. Okay? And when he's done, verse 28, and all the people in the synagogue were filled with rage as they heard these things. That's what triggered them. Mm-hmm. His positive reference to Gentiles, and they got up and drove him out of the city and led him to the brow of the hill in which the city had been built in order to throw him down the cliff, which, by the way, is the first step to stoning. You push him over the cliff, and then you drop rocks on him, right?
Yeah.
They were trying to execute him because of his favor, expressing favor, God's favor for Gentiles. So this just another fully underscores the point that you're making.
Yeah. So what we have here so far is we have the background of Jesus, the background information, the background context, and it seems to go against what the Reverend is his point that he's trying to make, and that is that Jesus is a racist. Now, going to your point, I mean, the reason they were so upset is because the kind of Jewish sentiment at the time was that Jews were unclean, okay? Gentiles were unclean, thank you. This woman, and I think this is why Mark makes this point, he says she's a Gentile. And so there's a number of kind of strikes against her being a Gentile. She's not just a Gentile, but she's a woman, mm-hmm. and a woman wouldn't have very high status in that culture, Jewish or not, you know, Gentile or Jewish. So she's a woman, she's a Gentile woman. Not only that, she's in that region of Tyre, which just from my own reading, I mean, that was like as unclean as you could get. I mean, mm-hmm. the people of Tyre were enemies of Israel, and there's history there. And so there's kind of strike three. There's strike four. She's got a demon in her family. I mean, it doesn't get any more unclean than that. And so here you have this woman, and this is going to get to the why does he refer to as a dog? Well, this is the cultural sentiment. This is how the culture would talk about a woman like this. She would be considered a dog because she is unclean. Okay. And so this is the background. He lays some of it for the woman. He says, look, this is how they would feel about a Gentile woman. He completely ignores the background information about Jesus. And now that we have kind of set the stage here, I think when we come to the text that you've read, we begin to see another picture. In fact, when we look at the context, our never read a Bible verse. Mm-hmm. What we mean by that is don't just read a verse. We're going to read more than one verse. We're going to read the context around this. And we find it when we back up, there is a specific reason why Mark puts this account right here and is connected immediately with a teaching that Jesus gives on clean and unclean. Jews that follow the law and, you know, clean their hands, you know, this is what starts an argument just in the same chapter. They're worried about clean hands, but they're not worried about clean hearts. And that is what Jesus is after. That's what God wants. He's after faithfulness. He's after faith. And they're talking about law. How come your disciples don't do this, 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 and this, and this? They are allowed to eat this, this, and this. Jesus, actually, a few verses later, he says, look, it's not what is on the outside that you put in you that makes you defiled or unclean. He talks about it's what comes out of the heart that makes you defiled or unclean. And so, I mean, you got to think about this. He's just now taught about the heart, and what Jesus is looking for is faith. And then it says, they go from there. They rose and went to the region of Tyre. Mm-hmm. He goes from this account of teaching, and now he's going to put this teaching in. He's going to apply it. He's going to show them. You guys saw me talking about it, and now I'm going to show you. We're going to go to a Gentile region, and Jesus knows what's going to happen. He knows this woman. He knows her heart, and he is going to get her to confess faith, and they're just going to be in awe. Whoa. This woman has a clean heart, even though on the outside she's looks unclean to all appearances. Mm-hmm. So let's go into this.
Yeah, it's interesting. You make a point that came up. I hadn't even thought about this, but we were chatting about it together. I'm not sure if Amy brought it up or not, but Jesus is in the habit of what's the good word here? Kind of enticing people with provocative statements, mm-hmm. you know, to get them to come out and make a confession or whatever. Think of the woman at the well. You know, Jesus is talking to her. He reveals himself as the Messiah to her. They're having this conversation. Her curiosity is piqued. And then he says, go get your husband.
Yeah.
Right? And she don't got no husband. You know, he says, you're right. In fact, the man you've had five and the one you're living with now is not your husband. So what is that? Now, that's probing. That's going deeper into something else. Now, I don't think the exact circumstances are parallel here. I think this is just another example, though, where Jesus raises an issue, says something because he's trying to go somewhere else with it.
Yeah.
And this is something that you've just pointed out here in the Mark chapter 7 passage. He's probing. He's getting her to respond. He can't be really believing she's unclean, because unclean is on the inside, not the outside, and skin color and ethnicity is on the outside.
Yeah, that's right.
That's just what he's been teaching against. And I think it's a great point, Tim, that you're making, that now here is an application for his disciples who are with him, and he's going to show exactly how this plays out, mm-hmm. because it ought to be an alert to folks when they read this that Jesus first says it's not good to do something, and then he does the very thing he says is not good to do.
That's right. It's not right to give the children's food to dogs, is what he says.
Yeah.
And then he's going to turn around and give it to her.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
So, you have to believe, if you think he actually believed that she was a dog, you'd have to think, yeah, Jesus really did change his mind here. Mm-hmm. I mean, because those are contradictory things. It's not right. But I'm going to do that thing I just said was not right.
Well, the reason that Reverend Brandon says is because he got shamed by the woman. So let's just look at that exchange here, Tim, if
sure.
we could.
Yeah.
You would think if the Reverend's take on this passage was accurate, it would be unlikely for this woman to say, yes, Lord. You would think she would say, remember, she's correcting him because he's a racist. And so she would say, no, bigot.
Yeah.
Well, but she says, yes, Lord, ironically.
And this is what I think where he's kind of playing fast and loose. I don't want to attribute motives, but in his text, he doesn't quote what she actually says. Here's what I read this. He says, she confronts Jesus and says, well, you can think that about me, but even dogs deserve the crumbs under the table. Her boldness and bravery speaking truth to power changed his mind. No, he completely misconstrues this mm-hmm. situation. She has fallen on her hands and on her knees in front of him and says, yes, Lord, I agree with you, but even the dogs deserve the crumbs.
Right. And the problem isn't that he paraphrased. We paraphrase all the time. It's the problem is that he paraphrased in a way that doesn't capture the sense of the passage.
Yeah.
And this is really a problem. But it does fit his own narrative of speaking truth to power. And that isn't what took place when you read this. But this still leaves open the question, why did Jesus refer to this woman as a dog? And here's, I'm going to offer an insight, Tim, when we talked about this, that I actually got from Richardson. Oh, my goodness. Old-timer moment here. He wrote Peace Child, for example.
I can't help you.
All right.
But I want to say that when you, because this insight is really helpful. And I've watched a couple different responses and no one has made this comment. So that's why I think this RPL is going to be particularly helpful for people.
Okay. Who is it? Don. Okay. Don Richardson. Thank you. Derek, help me out. Who is this I'm talking to? Derek. Okay. It's the deal with names. Never forget what's his name. Don Richardson made this point many years ago. He's famous for his book, Peace Child, which talks about how to contextualize the gospel when you're working cross-culturally. It's famous, the book. And but anyway, he was the one I listened to talk about this passage. And he made this point that I'm about to share that Tim was just referring to that I just think absolutely nails it, okay? What Jesus is doing here is he is not reflecting his own convictions. And we already know that. This is what Tim was just describing about this history of Jesus dealing with Gentiles, and the verses I offered as well make the same point. All through the Gospels, we see Jesus is pro-Gentile, even at the risk of his life, speaking truth to power, as it were, to demonstrate God's love for Gentiles, which goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 12 and the Abrahamic covenant. that the nation of Israel would be, the children of Abraham, the seed of Abraham, would be a blessing to all the earth. And and when you read through that, by the way, you see that there is a distinction that's made between Israel and non-Israel, the Gentiles, and God is trying to protect the Jews from being syncretistic, involving themselves too much with the cultures, because then they're going to lose their Jewishness. And that's why a lot of these laws were given. But they didn't listen to that. They were all screwy about that for 1,500 years, and that got them in a lot of trouble with God because of the syncretism. And then they got it straight in the intertestamental period, and now they're very rigid about this, so much so that they're not breaking through the barriers to communicate about God. And this is the situation we're faced with. When Jesus says that the children need to be satisfied, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs, he is not expressing his own theology. He is expressing the theology of the Jewish leadership at the time. And then what he does in his actions is he shows that that theology is false. By healing the woman who gives the right kind of answer. Now, she's shrewd. She is clever. She's on top of it. She knows that things aren't going well, apparently. That's my sense of it. With the children, they're pushing food off the table left and right, you know. But what I really appreciated, something you mentioned, Tim, maybe you can embellish on this, is that Jesus also predicted there was going to be time when there's going to be another table set, yeah. And it's going to be Gentiles at that table and not the children of Israel who discarded the food that was initially meant for them.
Yeah, this was actually after his encounter with the Roman centurion. He had just finished telling everyone, man, no greater faith have I seen in Israel. And then he says, many will come from east and west. He's talking about the Gentiles. Many will come from the east and the west and recline at the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. He's talking about Gentiles who put their trust in Jesus. They're going to sit at the same table as the children of Israel in the kingdom. They're not going to be on the floor eating crumbs off the floor. No, they're at the table. And so I think that there's no way that Jesus, who said these verses, who said these things, can be calling this woman, can actually believe that this woman is a dog and so on. Another insight, and this just occurred to me, I remember reading the passage again. And there's, again, I can't stress enough that I get it. People want to get the commentaries out. They want to like see what the smart guys are saying. But just go back and read your Bible. And I did this, and I'm reading through, and I'm just kind of taking my pen here and running along the words. And I get to this list in verse 20, chapter 7, verse 20. And this is Jesus speaking. And he said, what comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, comes evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, and then the word slander. And I just stopped and it was like, wait a second. Calling someone a dog is to slander the person. So if Jesus really was the one, if this was really his belief that these people are dogs and he's calling them a dog, he is doing the very thing he just said was an evil thought or an evil that was coming out of the heart of someone. He was slandering this woman.
And those are the last words immediately preceding this account of the Syrophoenician woman. And I just had another thought, too. The slander goes both ways. He would be doing what he said he shouldn't do if he really believed she was a dog. However, when someone looks at this account in isolation and calls Jesus a racist in virtue of their misreading of this text to the denial of all the other characterization of Jesus that we've been talking about in the rest of the Gospels, that is, well, libelous. That's a slander, okay? And that is mischaracterizing the person, the holy, noble, magnificently moral person of Jesus of Nazareth. So ironically, in this analysis, the Reverend Brandon Robertson, God bless his heart, maybe doing the best he can with the tools that he has mischaracterized Jesus' character and has slandered him in the process.
Yeah.
Crazy.
What's amazing is that this passage teaches the exact opposite of what Reverend Brandon Robertson thinks it mm-hmm. teaches. He thinks Jesus is getting corrected on his racism from this woman who's speaking truth to power, standing up for what she believes in, this kind of thing. And in reality, what Jesus is doing is he's taking the cultural view that Gentiles are dogs and, you know, this kind of idea, the kingdom isn't for them. And he's saying, no, this is mistaken. This is mistaken. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna prove it to you. Mm-hmm. Why, by healing this woman's daughter. Mm-hmm. I see her faith. You guys can't see that. You know, Jesus is the one that can see the heart. And I think that's why you talked about this is something Jesus did. He would say something provocative. Good teacher, what must I do to be saved? Well, why do you call me good? You know, this kind of thing. It was always like, instead of just answering the question, he was saying these provocative things to tease out. He wanted to show the heart of men. And he does that here. He quotes their philosophy, their sentiment about this woman. And she responds in this kind of faithful way. Look at, yeah. even we get the crumbs. Yeah. And he responds. He says, look, essentially, disciples, look at this faith.
I just thought of something else. I don't think this is the habit anymore. But when I was a kid in Chicago and you go to a restaurant and you have food to take home, they put it in a bag. Do you know what they call it? What they call this particular. Hey, can you bring me a
The doggy bag.
The doggy bag. Because they figured you're going to take the bones back to the dog or the leftovers to the dog. It was the doggy bag. And so, isn't that funny? There's a sense in which she's saying to Jesus, and this is the magnitude of her faith, she's saying, the leftovers are adequate for me.
Yeah.
Even the crumbs are plenty capable of accomplishing what I want, healing my daughter, casting the power of darkness out of her. I'll take the doggy bag. Well, that's the.
I'm writing this down. This is gonna make it into the script. I think this is really good, and I hope people are. You know, we've been going back and forth here now for how long here?
45 minutes.
Yeah. So. I hope people can see, look at this video will probably be 5-6 minutes long. And we're going to try and cram all this, all the most important content of this discussion down into that script so that people mm-hmm. can get handles on it and get the best response. But man, it seems to me, this woman is not speaking truth to power. She's clever. There's no doubt about it. She's faithful. Absolutely. But she is humbly, I mean, he paints this picture of this woman. I'm imagining like Hillary Clinton in like a pantsuit or something, you know, like this powerful woman. That's the picture. Instead of this humble woman submitting and pleading for mercy, have mercy on my daughter, Jesus, this kind of thing. You just don't get that from this TikTok video.
Another thought just came to mind, not only humble, but hungry. To a famished man, it says in Proverbs, any bitter thing is sweet, right?
Yeah.
And so you got everything. You're not very interested, right? A sated man refuses honey or something like that. But to a famished man, any bitter thing is sweet. She's famished. She's ready. And so Jesus has been rejected by his countrymen. You know, it says that in John chapter 1, he came to his own and they did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become the children of God. And so the reception there isn't just like I received Jesus into my heart. It's received like I welcome him into my company. I receive you. Come into my home. And that's essentially what she's doing. Come, I'm receiving you. They're rejecting you. I'm receiving you. I'm hungry. I'll eat the doggy bag stuff. I'll take the leftovers because that's enough for me. And Jesus sees that. And text says, when she answered this way, you know, because of this answer, go. The demon has gone out of your daughter. What a magnificent account. It tells us so much about the magnificent person of Jesus. It tells us so much about the nature of faith and the nature of humbly reaching out to Christ. And this, unfortunately, this TikTok brutalizes the text and slanders and libels the person of Jesus of Nazareth himself.
Now, I don't know if we have some time here, but Greg, when we spoke, I guess it was last week, about this video, you had made this comment about deconstruction.
Oh, yeah.
And how, and I thought it was a really good one. I don't know if we'll be able to work it into the video, but I think it's an overarching, like, this is what Reverend Brandon Robertson is doing, whether he realized it or not.
Yeah, let me explain that quickly. I got 6 or 7 minutes here. I don't think it'll make it into the video because it's too complex of a notion to work out there in a few words. But philosophically, the notion of deconstruction isn't just breaking it down into its component parts. That's not what it means in postmodern thinking. Deconstruction means reinterpreting something in light of one's own narrative. So you could go to, say, the Bible and deconstruct it, that is, read it in light of, say, a lesbian narrative, or you could read it in light of a Marxist narrative, or you could read it in light of whatever. The point here is the goal is not to get the information from the text intended by the author, but rather to read your own meaning into it, because texts have no meaning of their own. That's all part of the postmodern approach. It's only narrative from the community that we read back into these texts. So so this is what we see happening here. It appears to me, that was my reflection. We have an individual, Brandon, who is, did I get that right?
Yeah,
Brandon Robertson, who has a point of view about these kinds of things and reads it back into a text that does not contain that point of view. But that's not relevant. Not on the deconstruction approach. It's not relevant what somebody else meant. Who knows what they meant? It's not relevant. It doesn't matter. What matters is what it means to me or to us or to our linguistic tradition. We can read in whatever we want. But of course, then the narrative itself loses its authority. It isn't like Jesus like said it, so that matters. Because in this way of approaching the text, we are putting our meanings into his mouth. And in fact, on this view, that's all we can do. We can never get back to the meaning of the text. Now, this is foolishness. It's obvious because people who write about what I just described write about it in books. And they expect you to understand their notion.
Yeah.
They don't expect you to deconstruct their own work.
That's right.
According to your own narrative.
Yeah.
You know, so they assume a straightforward common sense ability to communicate with words as they're trying to undermine the whole notion. So this is suicide in terms of our tactical approach. But it just occurred to me, this is what's going on here. This is an attempt to read into the text something that's not actually there and consequently mischaracterize Jesus. But on that view, and I'm not entirely sure of Brandon's perspective on this, but on that approach, what the author had in mind is irrelevant. What matters only is what's going on in the reader when he or she reads that. So, yeah, that's an additional kind of insight. Now, we're almost out of time here. We had another one that just came up. I'm just curious, could you take a moment and just read it? It's a very short one. But
yeah.
And people can be thinking about how they would respond to this if they read this little meme. And I don't know, we might do a RPL on this. That's next in line after the one we're working on here for Reverend Brandon. So
yeah,
what does it say, Tim?
We have a number of them, but in line. But this one,
there's lots of them out there.
This is from Union Seminary. So they're a seminary that's gone quite liberal, progressive.
Although ironically, Dietrich Bonhoeffer actually attended Union Seminary back in the 30s.
Okay. And the quote here is, there's a tag associated with it. So someone said this, but it says, "Social justice is not extra. Social justice is the gospel." So social justice is the gospel.
You know what I thought when I heard that, Tim? I was toying with Derek talking about this. I thought, oh my goodness, 47 years a Christian, and I've been getting it wrong. I have been preaching a false gospel because my gospel has not entailed social justice the way social justice is construed. Now, people need to understand, there's more could be said about this, obviously. Yeah. Social justice is a term of art. That means you can't just look at the words and draw a conclusion of what they mean. You have to see how the term is used in a larger ideology. That's what it means to be a term of art. It's a term of art of critical race theory, okay? And so it functions in a very particular way in that view. And given the view, you do not want to be an SJW, which is a social justice warrior, because that is not consistent with Christianity. And the irony is here's somebody from Union Seminary that's not only saying it is consistent with Christianity, it is Christianity. It is the gospel.
So people can stay tuned for this one, because there will be at least a graphic and maybe something more for this.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is where, since this is kind of this little exercise here in the last 60 seconds, where people, having heard about this piece, can be thinking for themselves. It's only a couple of lines. It's not, social justice is not extra. So to the gospel, or however they put it, social justice is the gospel.
The gospel, yeah.
Okay, now it's your turn, listener. Okay, now it's your turn. If you were doing RPL, what would you say? Mm-hmm. How would you characterize this? How would you
respond?
I don't know. Don't worry about being too clever. But I mean, these are the kinds of things that this isn't fringe. This isn't just something that's out there, and we just happen to cherry pick some weird thing. This is mainstream. It is happening everywhere now, and it is happening not just out there, but in the church. After all, this is a piece. Jesus is a racist. Reverend Brandon Robertson. It's not out there. It's in here. And I've mentioned, you know, to you guys, the team, and my young guns and everybody here, my heart now is to protect the church from the world and from the wolves. The world is out there. The wolves are on the inside, and there are plenty of wolves, and this is an example of one of them, in my humbling opinion. IMHO.
Well, you just gave them their homework assignment, so there you go.
All right, Tim, look at what a treat to hang out with you. Here comes our music. So I'll talk to you next time, and we'll do this again soon. Take care,
yeah,
brother.
Yeah, can't wait.
All right. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven, friends. Bye-bye now.